Owen Myers, welcome to Today in Focus.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So you're the Deputy Arts Editor for Garden US, and you've written this really deep dive into the story behind the making of the Michael Jackson biopic. First of all, how long has it been in the works, and what was its original premise?
Yeah, absolutely. So the producer, Graham King, has had the rights for a while. He was coming out of the success of Bohemian Rhapsody, the extremely commercially successful biopic of Freddie Mercury. But a lot of times it's kind of seemed like it's a beleaguered or if not cursed production. The shooting actually finished and the estate dug out a certain legal clause to show that a certain depictions in the film of an early 90s abuse case weren't allowed to be shown.
We had a legal issue. We found out after we had finished shooting the film that the estate didn't realise at the time. So it was a little bit of a shock to both of us. Yeah. I think it's actually been a blessing in disguise, to be honest.
This is a really strong film.
So this is because of a legal settlement with the family of Jordan Chandler, who was one of the children who accused Michael Jackson of sexual abuse. And there was a clause in that settlement that prohibited any mention of Chandler in any future films.
Absolutely. So the film went through some very expensive reshoots that the estate funded, apparently around 10 to 15 million. So what's finally made it to the screen is quite a different version of the script that was originally planned, which was going to end in the early 90s, and it will end just after Thriller and just before Bad, and seeing Michael Jackson at the peak of his fame.
And so, as you said, it was originally slated to be released last year, and it's had quite the journey with the major reshoots and at least one family member, Paris Jackson, heir to Michael Jackson's estate, claiming that it was sugar-coated and containing a number of, quote, full-blown lies.
The narrative is being controlled. And there's a lot of inaccuracy and there's a lot of just full-blown lies. And at the end of the day,
Oh, and how has the film been marketed and how has it been received by the entertainment industry?
Well, I think that the film would, and the studio Lionsgate would quite like you to forget that there's any dissenting voices. There's been a full-scale marketing assault. There are flash mobs on the street of New York. There was a pop-up gallery to celebrate Jackson's costumes in Soho, New York. And all around the world, there's been influencer screenings.
For context, I was very fortunate enough to have been invited to an advanced screening of Michael the Movie. I showed up my little Billie Jean costume and just simply had the best night of my life.
So this is kind of before the rest of the world gets to see the movie, in the hope that that will be a nice trickle of early buzz for the movie.
See the GOAT? He is the GOAT. That wasn't like a film. I felt like I was watching a concert, and I feel like
a really interesting part of the whole campaign for me is just how softball, the promotions has been around this film.
Jafar Jackson, welcome to the Tonight Show.
Amazing. I love the energy.
Thank you for coming on. I can't wait to talk about Michael and what a great performance.
You would think this is an opportunity for some of the cast, some of the respected cast like Coleman Domingo, Nia Long, to really sit down with mass media news outlets and engage. You'd expect a lot of glossy magazine covers.
And I know this kind of happened serendipitously, but you worked really hard for this part.
Yeah, it was a process that I really had to earn and really prove to.
Instead, we've got these quite softball lifestyle publications that have featured the cast and director.
It is incredible how you recreated these scenes. Which one was the hardest?
Thank you. Which one was the hardest? I would say probably Billie Jean.
And that's probably because the Michael Jackson estate was so heavily involved in this production. And since his death, they have been the ones ensuring his back catalogue remains profitable.
The executors of the estate are two lawyers named John McLean and John Branca. They took over the Jackson estate after he died.
It's just unbelievable. Michael Jackson sells more tickets dead than most artists do alive.
That is absolutely true. Worldwide box office now.
Part of why John Branca specifically is a notable figure is he's been Jackson's attorney since the 80s. Mm. He shepherded Jackson to buy the Beatles catalog in the 1980s, which was a huge source of his income. Him and Jackson had a rocky relationship, but John Branca came back into the picture around This Is It, the Jackson documentary released shortly after his death, showing Jackson.
This is the concert film, right?
This was the concert film. So he was scheduled to do this run of, I believe, 50 shows at the O2 in London, and that was going to be his big return to the stage.
I'll be performing the songs my fans want to hear. This is it. I mean, this is really it. This is the final curtain call.
He died 2 weeks before those concerts were scheduled to start, but This Is It was shepherded by John Branca into a very timely release in cinemas for a public that is still grieving Jackson and
very much cashing in, right, at that point.
Very much taking the opportunity of some goodwill towards Jackson at that time. Man in the Mirror had shot back to number 2 on the UK charts following his death. This Is It went on to gross over $200 million at the worldwide box office, and it's actually the biggest grossing documentary of all time.
Lanre Beccaro, welcome back to Today in Focus.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you are the Guardian's arts and culture correspondent. So first of all, can you try to explain just how huge Michael Jackson was at his peak?
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier. It's hard to explain it. I think if I was talking to a 10-year-old or a 13-year-old today, trying to explain how big Michael Jackson is, it's like take someone like Taylor Swift, take Beyonce, put them together, times them by like 10, and you're still absolutely nowhere near what Michael Jackson was at his peak. Which, if we're taking his peak to be like late 80s going into the 90s, like he dominated the 80s. Mm. He was the biggest thing going.
When the stadium doors finally opened, it was impossible not to be overwhelmed watching the fans storm onto the field to get the coveted spot at the very front.
World tours that made him millions of dollars.
People here have waited so long for the show that the anticipation level creates mass hysteria.
A Thriller selling 80 million copies.
And the winner is Michael Jackson.
Fastest selling album ever. And also, he, like, changed what a pop star could be. Mm. He kind of emerged through Motown, and you've got the kind of classic R&B kind of setup.
The Jackson 5 are here tonight. They're, without a doubt, one of the most popular singing groups in the entire world today.
With his brothers.
I'm Jermaine.
Jermaine.
I'm Tito. Marlon.
I'm Randy.
Randy.
Jackie.
And I'm Michael.
You're Michael. Good.
And then he becomes a solo act who not only can dance, not only can he sing, he actually is smart enough to realise that the future is music videos. And he creates Thriller, which is just completely changes the culture when it came to the standard that you had to set for a music video. You've got these amazing dance sequences. It's kind of like a 12-minute film, basically.
Yeah.
Are you alright?
That MTV initially didn't want to play because they didn't play black music, but they had to play it because Michael Jackson just completely transcended any kind of genre limitations.
It's worth reminding the kids that I think every party that you ever had with your cousins after Thriller came out, for about 10 years, you'd all be playing and recreating Thriller.
No. Yeah, I mean, I remember being at like Nigerian gatherings, and if Michael Jackson came on, everybody would get into it. Like, it'd be a multi-generation dance contest happening. People absolutely bloody love Michael Jackson because it wasn't just one or two great songs.
Mm.
It was albums where every single track was incredible over a 10-year period.
Well, what did he mean to you? I mean, we're both children of the 80s. We both, I guess, have pretty strong and somewhat fond memories of Michael Jackson. But for you personally, Lanre, what did Michael Jackson mean in your life?
I absolutely loved him. I thought it was incredible. I mean, I was trying to remember my earliest memory of him, and it was probably Bad. And that coming out in 1987, and the music video was him and Wesley Snipes.
I said, leave me alone! I'm tired of you messing with me! Stop it!
Are you ready?
Stop it! Leave me alone! Stop!
I mean, looking back on it, it's kind of ridiculous. He's playing this kind of tough guy, but he's got like this relaxed air, super light skin. He's got this kind of strange, like, biker outfit, and he's kind of threatening these dudes, but it's like he's got this incredibly effeminate voice.
Let's see who's bad, man. Come on, let's go.
And then kind of going back to the earlier records, we've got the Jackson 5, where they created some of the best bubblegum pop ever.
That little Michael Jackson with that just adult range, just dazzling to watch.
Yeah, I was watching that. I was watching him play I Want You Back yesterday. Oh, baby, I found it really emotional watching it because there's the innocence there, and this is always the thing with Michael Jackson. Mm. As a kid, the images as a child, he's so innocent and he's so talented, and you kind of know what's coming next.
Your piece opens with a really shocking detail that I just still can't wrap my head around, about the story of Jordan Chandler, who in 1993 was the first boy to publicly accuse Michael Jackson of sexually abusing him. What happened and how was it dealt with at the time?
Well, it was absolutely an explosive case at the time. Jordan Chandler was a boy that was 12 years old and had accompanied Michael Jackson on his Dangerous World Tour, particularly on the Asian leg of the tour. He was always by Michael's side. Michael made no secret of it. He was in many photographs. Jordan Chandler, as a 12, 13-year-old, would come to Neverland to stay. Jackson would go and stay at Chandler's house. There was a real trust that Jordan Chandler's family put into Jackson, and they would have sleepovers. They spent, I believe, 30 consecutive nights sleeping over together. A lot of people would raise their eyebrows at that, knowing what we know now, but Jackson, you know, this was not a rich family. You know, imagine the biggest star in the world shows up at your door. Your logic might take a back seat for a minute if you're a little dazzled. So Jackson allegedly played on families that were not particularly well adjusted. He knew that the people that he could maybe like bend the rules with, hence the sleepovers.
So people who are a bit more vulnerable, which is in the grooming playbook, so to speak.
That lines up with a lot of what, you know, the grooming playbook typically is. And Jordan Chandler did come forward to the LAPD in late 1993. And as part of the questioning, the LAPD asked Jordan Chandler to draw by hand Jackson's genitalia. It's well known that Jacktiv had a skin condition that discolored parts of his body. So what Jordan Chandler did was he drew a drawing of the private parts that had blotches, specifically on the underside of the penis and other distinctive markings in the area. And, you know, the kind of knowledge that you would only know one way, right? These drawings were put in a sealed envelope, and simultaneously Jackson was submitted to a strip search at the Neverland Ranch to take those intimate pictures. And this is well documented. This is a fact, is that the pictures matched up. And this is confirmed by multiple detectives from the LAPD at the time. Jackson called the experience the most humiliating ordeal of his life, and he always forcefully denied the allegations.
He also settled out of court for $25 million with the Chandler family.
He did, yeah, and that came in the week or two after this strip search session. So this was something that Jackson wanted to be resolved very quickly. Mm. And critics have commented that perhaps the amount of money was too much for anyone to say no to, especially for not a rich family. Mm. So Jackson didn't have to submit to a criminal trial in that case.
It's sort of mind-boggling reading that stuff back as an adult. I mean, there was this total suspension of belief, I guess. I mean, looking back at it now. And, of course, there were then other accusations. You know, there was even a trial. Owen, can you briefly run me through a timeline of the allegations made against Michael Jackson?
So after the Jordan Chandler trial in 1993 is the Martin Bashir documentary, which was in 2003.
I love climbing trees. I think it's my favorite thing. Having water balloon fights and climbing trees, I think those two are my favorite.
That raised a lot more questions about Jackson again, because it really showed Jackson at the Neverland Ranch with children, including a young boy whose name is Gavin.
When Gavin was there, he talked about the fact that he shares your bedroom.
Yes.
Can you understand why people would worry about that?
Because they're ignorant.
Saying that the most loving thing you can do is share a bed with children.
That's a beautiful thing.
That's not a worrying thing?
Why should they be worrying? Who's the criminal? Who's Jack the Ripper in the room?
Neverland had a petting zoo, it had a fairground, it had popcorn machines. Jackson loved to be surrounded by children. Mm. He insisted that he had more in common with children than adults, and they shared a lot of interests. By 2005, that boy Gavin had come forward and sued Jackson.
There followed this surreal moment. The singer clambered aboard his waiting limousine to wave and blow kisses to his fans.
So in 2005, brought a three-month-long criminal trial for Jackson. This was the only time in which the child abuse allegations were heard in front of a jury.
Bizarre, certainly. Deluded, possibly. But a criminal? We'll have to wait and see.
And many people came and argued for Jackson's defence, including the comedian Chris Tucker. Macaulay Culkin came to Jackson's defence in that trial.
We have to cover it, so let's ask about it. What's the relationship that you had with Michael Jackson?
Had or have? I mean,
had both.
You know, whatever.
Let's go with had.
Listen,
to have.
You know, no, he's a good friend of mine, and he still is. I mean, everything that's going on, I mean, it's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate situation for everyone involved, and.
He was another child actor who had been in Jackson's orbit for a long time as well, right?
A long time. I think in the Black or White video, no secret about that friendship. They would show up on red carpets together. Culkin has always maintained that relationship was very innocent. So he came to Jackson's defense. And
there it is, all 10 counts, not guilty on all 10 counts.
That court did find Jackson innocent, and he was exonerated of all charges.
Clearly now, it's pandemonium out here among the crowd members. They are jubilant. Inside the courtroom, we understand from our producer, Michael Jackson dabbed his eyes with Kleenex during the reading of the verdict.
And in death, some new allegations have surfaced since then, most notably in Dan Reed's 2018 documentary, Leaving Neverland. And it focused on two boys, Wade Robson and James Safechuck, that, again, a similar age to some of the other boys we've been discussing, who say they were 12 and 13 when they were abused and assaulted by Jackson as boys.
He told me if they ever found out what we were doing, he and I would go to jail for the rest of our lives.
Secrets will eat you up. You feel so alone.
It's a really grueling documentary. A lot of the details that emerge, even without some of the context of the allegation, are, you know, kind of stomach-churning in themselves. You know, Jackson had a bedroom with a hallway leading up to it that was covered with cameras. It was booby-trapped with alarms so that an alarm would sound if anyone approaches. So his bedroom was completely private and sealed off. In Jackson's bedroom, there were suitcases of erotic material. Forensic investigators subsequently found fingerprints of the boys on such materials. The Robson and Safechuck case is actually yet to go to trial. It's scheduled for later this year. And then just this February, new allegations broke by four siblings, the Cassio siblings. I spoke with their lawyer, Howard King, who represents them, and told me all about how they allege a decade of sustained abuse. They allege child trafficking, they allege assault, and they allege grooming in a level of detail which is really shocking and harrowing to read, to review those reports. That case will likely be going to trial next year. But in the meantime, the estate would very much like you to focus on the biopic and celebration of his life. So we have these sort of dueling parallel narratives at the moment.
Coming up, why fans still can't get enough of Michael Jackson.